So, sex robots and vegan meat, just two approaches we can take this hour. The phones are full. So we just gave you the numbers, but hang on. It'll take a few minutes of answering these to get a space for you. I'll work on that if you can be patient next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. By the way, I'll be on again this coming Saturday night. I'll be talking with our old friend Peter Lance, a new book out about the murderous Doris Duke. Great book. He's done, of course, amazing research, as he always does. And had a good chat with him a couple of weeks ago about this. I'm looking forward to that in a big way. In fact, I'm making the rare Sunday night appearance because we wanted to be able to talk with Jenny Kleeman. She ordinarily is on the air in England on Friday and Saturday morning. So had to come in on a Sunday or I'd never have a chance to chat with her, loving it so much. And that's probably another reason why all the phones are full. So, Jenny, if you're ready, we'll get to as many of these as we can this half hour and we'll load back up again. Walt is on a wild card line in Allentown, Pennsylvania for Jenny Kleeman, author of Sex Robots and Vegan Meat. Walt?
How you doing, Ian? Interesting conversation with Ms. Kleeman. She's covered a number of topics. Donna said I should just stick to one. So I want to comment on the sex doll issue. Ian, with all due respect, you know I'm a pretty conservative guy. I'm an endowment member of the NRA, et cetera. But when it comes to sex, I'm pretty laid back and liberal now. I think we have to guard against being too puritanical. I think the sex doll is like a high-tech masturbation toy. You already
right. I think we pretty cleared that up.
It's like a vibrator with all the bells and whistles. And I think we have to guard against puritanism. If you read the Bible, Deuteronomy says that the woman doesn't bleed on her wedding night, she can be stoned to death. So I think we have to obviously stay away from...
We're a long way from there, Walt. But let's get Jenny's thought on that. And you approach that section, and I have to say, I really encourage people to read the book because you don't shame. You're not wagging your finger at these people, but there is a natural level of absurdism that comes into it. For example, when you have these sort of techie guys trying to talk about these dolls without making it just seem like they're selling, a high-end masturbation service.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, there's the kind of artisanship, the craftsmanship of how they're made. Two different kinds of nipple to choose between, 14 different styles of labia to choose between. Look, my criticism about it is it's not a puritanical thing. It's not because I think sex is dirty and that people shouldn't have kinks. I think people should do whatever they like in the bedroom within reason, as long as it's legal. For me, the issue isn't so much the sex, it's the relationship. It's the fact that this is something that will talk to you and agree with you, and it will be your own personal domestic echo chamber. And I think the damage comes from when human beings get used to having relationships with something that looks and acts very real, but all they have to care about is how they feel and what they want to do. I think human empathy is going to become kind of hard work, and we will become less good at relating to other human beings, and we will become even more withdrawn and selfish once it's possible to own one of these things. But, my criticisms of them aren't to do with the fact that I think it's dirty and wrong, and that I disagree with people who are prepared to have sex with robots. I don't at all. What I'm worried about is when they become a little bit too human-like so that it affects the way that humans interact with each other.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Stan is in Fresno, and he actually has a doll.
Yes. Oh, wow.
How would you describe your doll?
I'm very careful with it. I'm very open. I live in Fresno, California. I've been a very, very good gentleman to women for years and years. I got a little bit fed up with the women's lib movement, the ERA movement, the racial put down, the gender put down. With all the different races of men they prefer over a white guy. I got a little bit tired of it. I went through this crap for a long time. And finally, you know, I heard about realdoll.com. I held off for a while. Finally, I bought one. And I'm very happy with it. You know, I think that the best, before I go on, I went on the internet and found a guy that wrote an article. It says, will sex robots reduce the power of women? Will sex robots reduce the power of women? By Robert Basso.
Okay.
B-A-S-S-O, Robert Basso. I liked a lot of people to read that article.
Okay. But let's get to it. You have a question for our guest. I mean, do you have...
I mean, I just, you know, it's hard to say a question. I mean, it's like I'm trying to indicate, you know, I'm trying to tell people where I'm coming from, why I bought the doll. I bought the doll basically because I can't deal with a lot of the women today. You know, I mean, dude, I'm a conservative man, just like the gentleman spoke before. But I'm a Christian, yes, I do believe in God, and but you know, I just, it's to the point where, you know, I've been through so much with these women, I can't deal with it anymore. And
okay, stop right there then. Let's go ahead and let's give Jenny a chance to respond, because now you're just kind of repeating yourself, and I'm not sure that you aren't making her point for her.
Absolutely.
To be totally honest with you.
I think you really are, Stan, because I think that what would really enrich your life would be a fulfilling relationship with a woman, because I don't think that all women are the way that you describe, are difficult, don't like white men. I mean, I think you have been unlucky in the relationships that you've had and in the people that you've met. It's a big, wide world out there. And I think what would make your life so much more worth living is not a doll that you can customize to be exactly how you want it to be, but a flesh and blood human being, and something that's keeping you at home and keeping you away from those interactions makes it even less likely that you will find those connections in the real world, and you will become more and more angry with women and with the state of the world today.
Yeah.
Until you have that real human contact.
It does sound a little bitter, and I'm not, when he said women's liberation movement, I'm only talking like 40 years ago. So, I mean, I'd be curious to hear more about it. Now, I will go.
A lot of people feel that way, I think. I mean, in my reporting for my book, I spoke to a lot of people on the internet who feel that way, who feel that women's liberation has gone too far, that it has left men completely disempowered and in an impossible situation. But I think that's a very, very particular view. That's a kind of MRA, men's rights activist view of the world. And, you know, just as there are many different kinds of men, there are many, many different kinds of women. There are a lot of women who are very traditional and who would really love a good conservative man. We are not all the same.
Yeah, I agree. First-time caller line, Allison is in, are you in Louisiana?
Nope, I'm in Los Angeles area.
Okay, it says L.A., and I wasn't sure whether you were going
a
state or city. And so you have a question or comment for Jenny Kleeman?
How about both?
Go ahead.
I wanted to bring up Ray Kurzweil, which both of you are familiar with, I'm sure. And just... Okay. And just, you know, the idea that he's saying, you know, within the 21st century, just wanted to get both of your thoughts on, you know, his idea, let's say, that individual beings will merge and then separate constantly and then make it impossible to determine how many people there are on the Earth, and that the vast majority of Earth sentient beings will be AIs, and there will be just a minority of quote-unquote natural humans. And just, you know, what you think about
the singularity
state of being.
Right. Where are you on the singularity, Jenny?
I think that these tropes of science fiction, they're very seductive. They're very entertaining. I think in real terms, it would require a lot of people to sign up to that world, where that technology is so widespread for it to really be a thing. So I can't really see that happening for a long time. You know, there needs to be a lot of social and political things going on in order for that world to exist. Everyone needs to be able to afford this technology. Everyone needs to be able to have access to this technology. And that's not going to happen for a long time. But nonetheless, I think the one thing that we know, and I write about this in my book, that technology always has unintended consequences that even the cleverest people cannot foresee or determine. Right. You know, when Steve Jobs launched the iPhone in 2007, he was hoping it would corner 1% of the market. He had no idea that we would all become completely addicted to our phones. You know, yesterday I lost my phone for 7 hours, and I felt like my arm had been cut off. I felt like my leg had been cut off. And so I think we don't know where technology will lead us, but those kind of tropes of science fiction about humanity being kind of, artificial intelligence taking over, and there being a kind of minority of natural humans would depend for there to be a critical mass of artificial intelligence in use, which I think we are quite far away from having the social and political conditions for that to exist.
That's a very interesting observation. I think the idea of the singularity already being represented in how addicted we are to our smartphones and how much we have merged already with smartphones, never mind what other kind of technology is out there.
Absolutely. I mean, it has completely colonized our brains, our smartphones. I mean, neurologically, it is wiring us differently, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I would experience singularity if my wife ever found out I had a sex robot in the garage. It would be different kind of singularity, maybe, but all right, let me go to wildcard line. Steve is in Clearwater on Coast to Coast AM on a wildcard line. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for taking my call.
Glad to have you.
I'm a 66-year-old man. In 1977, I knew a young woman. I was in love with her, and I haven't seen her in 43 years. And I think I saw her last week. And naturally, looks have changed and everything. But, you know, I would marry her today, and I don't think there's enough people out there who have experienced true love.
Oh, that's true.
And I think this trend away from true love and just basic love and getting along is dangerous enough without reducing ourselves to machines for companionship. I think the species that we've become, like you said, with phones and technology, is becoming very robotic and unhuman, and if it continues, we're going to lose the jism to reproduce, and we're going to die off as a species. What do you think?
Other than that word, I feel great about it. But Jenny, where are you with that?
I think that technology that was supposed to bring us together is bringing us further apart. Like things like social media, which can allow you to connect with people who you haven't seen for 40 years. You can make that connection, but the quality of that connection is really poor. It's really superficial. You're kind of snooping on their posts and peering into their lives. And even things that have saved us in the pandemic, things like, you know, Zoom and Skype and FaceTime, is absolutely no substitute for real human face-to-face interaction. And I say this as somebody who comes up with ideas for articles. You know, the creative force is completely gone from those very deliberate meetings that you have online, rather than the coffee that you have afterwards or the conversation you have when you're getting in the elevator together. That's where the magic happens. And I think we are, because this is all about being sold products. We're being sold products that we're being told will enrich our lives. What is devalued is the free stuff, the softer stuff in life, those chance interactions, those little conversations. And as you say, you know, if you talk about true love or what a real meaningful relationship is, what is interesting there is you're saying that you see somebody you haven't seen for 43 years, of course, looks have changed, but you would marry her tomorrow. The kind of love that is being packaged in these dolls is a perpetually young love with the body of a porn star.
Right.
And the idea that is what you'd always want to companionship with, when actual real enduring love is love that changes and grows with you. And that's something I haven't even really thought of before, that these robots represent a certain kind of static relationship, whereas real true love changes and develops and grows. And in that respect, it will never be able to replace a human relationship.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I would say, when you look at a porn star, you'd say, oh, she's got the body of a doll.
Yes.
Right?
Surgically enhanced. Yeah, it's
not real. You know, and the whole thing about FaceTime and Zoom and other stuff, my wife is a three-time Emmy Award-winning TV producer, and we've been, I teach here at Kansas State, and so we have experienced these long periods of separation when she's on a shoot or when she's doing, fancy TV stuff. And were it not for FaceTime, we might have lost some of our connection. That FaceTime is actually what has made it more bearable, not less.
Yes.
And
not pushed us apart. It's a tool, but it is not the solution, because in fact what you should, you know, the ideal situation is that you'd be in the same place together. That's the thing. And it's this idea that the technology can replace what was otherwise there is the dangerous thing. You know, it is something that's there. It's something that you can play around with and use it as you want, but it's not an answer. It's not a solution. The solution to being apart from the person that you love is to try and get together with them whenever you can. You know?
Right. But it took the sting out of Valentine's Day today because of that. That and I recorded a karaoke version of me singing Radiohead's Creep and sent it to her. So don't say I'm not romantic, you know. All right, let me go to Wildcard Line. Joe is in Monterey, California on Coast to Coast. Joe, where are you with all this?
Oh, thank you, Ian. Well, this is a situation. I feel that the human race hasn't developed spiritually or haven't evolved enough to be on the level of the technology at hand.
What?
The possibility of cloning oneself and transferring themselves into a body that is suitable for other environments, like on other planets, is endless. Space travel would be a daily thing. And we could go to any planet and tailor-make whatever body is suitable for that environment. Plus the fact that we will be closely immortal, but our spirituality must be on the par with our technology.
See, you lose me right there. I'm with you on that other part because that sounds interesting. There is no such thing as the spirituality of technology. By definition, I mean, even if we look at it in any religious context, technology has no spirit.
Yes. This is the problem. We have to be spiritual and not our technology.
Okay. All right. Well, then, Jenny, where are you with that?
That is a very deep and profound comment that I'm not quite sure how to follow up. I mean, I think that it comes down to a fundamental question of what is consciousness and what is real. You know,
right.
If we upload our minds into machines and give those machines spirituality, are we actually there, or is the machine a simulation of us? And I would say the machine is a simulation of us. I'd say human beings are mortal, sadly. I mean, that is a fact of life. We are born, we eat food, we seek out sexual relationships, and we die. That is the definition of what it is to be a human animal. And so whilst we might be able to imbue machines with an illusion of spirituality by uploading some kind of degree of consciousness, that won't be us. It will be a computer program mimicking us. And for me, that, you know, it's a distinction between the virtual and the real, and the virtual will never be real. What's real is to be immortal and to be embodied.
Excellent. We gave out the numbers earlier this hour. We'll do it again coming up in just a few minutes so that you can grab one of these lines when they become open. If you take a look at our future, I know there's the idea of this notion of being able to transfer consciousness into some sort of technology. I think that may actually be the furthest thing away. Those two things are, I can't, it'd be like teaching a worm how to drive a tank or something. I mean, maybe someday, how, I don't know, but I mean, I just don't see that. These other things that you write about in Sex Robots and Vegan Meat, in some respects, they're already here, or the foundational science behind them is already employed. And that's the difference between that and something like transferring our consciousness into a computer.
Yes, absolutely. Some of them are already on the market. Certainly the robotic heads are on the market. And if you're in Singapore, you can buy the lab-grown chicken nuggets. So they're already here. Yes, totally.
Right. Ian Chicken. Find out more at coasttocoastam.com on other ways which we explore these topics all the time and beyond belief from George Norrie always has a special deal, too, if you're really into that cosmic stuff that we were just talking about. But let's get back down to Earth. And we'll get you on the air coming up our last half hour. Not many opportunities for you to talk with Jenny Kleeman. I would take it while you can. And we'll get in as many callers between now and the top of the hour as possible. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. It's a great read, Jenny Kleeman's book, Sex, Robots, and Vegan Meat. First-time caller line, Keith, is on Vancouver Island. Keith?
Hi, Ian.
Hi. You got a question for Jenny?
Hello?
Yeah, you're doing great.
I just had a question, Ian. I wondered if a human being created outside of a human womb would have a soul.
Well, in theological terms, I'll jump in. Pardon me, Jenny. I got one of those pesky little MDivs. There is nothing in the Bible that says the womb is the soul delivery system, right? Ensoulment, as the term goes, is kind of a mystery. We wouldn't imagine that it had to be inside of a womb. Because any living creature without a soul is, to use an ancient understanding, is by definition a monster, right? Living creatures without souls are monsters. So I can't imagine why we would think about that with a beautiful child that you're rocking in your arms, that the child would be a monster or would be soulless. People used to say that about test tube babies. I think we put that to bed a long time ago. But Jenny, where are you with that?
I think this is much more a question for you, Ian, than for me, because this is a spiritual question and not a question about technology. Where does the soul reside and how is it conferred? I mean, I would say a baby grown in an artificial womb should be, if the technology works, the same as a baby grown in a uterus. You know, comes from sperm and egg, and it gestates in the same way, but it all depends on where you think the soul resides.
Well, and, you know, when does that transference happen? I think this is the ineffability of the divine. We really don't know. I think we're not allowed to know. I don't think there's, I mean, it's sort of, to me, it's like asking, would a human being created outside of a womb have a hat? I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, no prevention of that. All right, let's go to Keith in Erie, Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast. Keith?
Yeah, it's Monday. Write your own joke. And speaking of jokes, I like about the oxymoron vegan meat. What are the consequences of the food service industry figuring out a way of doing this concept and cheaping it down so they can make a profit down the road?
Well, of course they will. That's the whole point, right? Jenny?
That's a really good question, though, because the entire industry depends on this stuff being both taste competitive with real meat and price competitive. If it tastes the same and it's cheaper, then that's when it's going to fly. And in order for that to happen, they have to have these huge facilities with giant bioreactors making this stuff. And those are going to be very expensive things to construct. So for the moment, it is very expensive. And my kind of concern with it is it's from a kind of food security perspective, that in this future world where we all still eat meat, but we don't kill animals for it, we're going to be dependent on these giant bioreactors, these big companies, these big facilities that are able to produce this meat. And, you know, anyone can raise chickens at the moment, but in this future, we will all be dependent on these big companies to produce it, because the whole point is that unless it is competitive at a price level, it's not going to take off in the way that the people who are making it want it to take off, not just for financial reasons, but because it's not going to save the planet unless lots of people are eating it instead of meat grown in an animal.
I love that guy you interview in the book who was one of the people behind the vegan meat movement, and that he claimed to be a communist. And it's like,
yes.
I thought it was so silly. He's talking about, no, I'm basically a communist working in the most capitalistic frame. And saying, well, it's the only one we got, so, you know, I have to work on it.
He's a communist working in a startup, a kind of Bay Area startup, trying to invite investment, you know, venture capital from like the richest people on the planet. But yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was, I mean, it's just, I thought, kind of laughed out loud. I thought, well, dude, I hope your product's better than your logic. Wildcard line, Jim is in Michigan on Coast to Coast AM. Jim?
Hey, how's it going, Ian?
Good. You're talking with Jenny Kleeman. Go ahead.
I don't know what it is. I always seem to get through when you're on. I love it when you're on.
It's because nobody wants to talk to me. It's a lot. The competition's lower.
The thought I had about all this is with the sex dolls, for instance.
Yep.
Could that not be a positive in the overpopulation of the planet that we have?
Well, be more specific.
Well, if more people become attached and you choose to use these sex robots, and they don't have children, would that not lower our population at least a little bit and help with some of the problems that we're having because of overpopulation?
Jenny?
Well, I would say that I think a lot of people have babies on purpose. And so that might help with the few unplanned, well, the unplanned pregnancies that definitely do exist, but I don't think overpopulation comes from unplanned pregnancies necessarily. I think it comes from the fact that fewer people are dying in infancy, they're surviving to a reproductive age, and they are choosing to have children. And I think as a form of contraception, there are much cheaper ways to stop overpopulation than giving people sex robots. One thing I would say, though, about sex robots over the past year is they are, you know, they would be very good in a time of COVID. If you're looking at socially distanced relationships, you can't get safer sex than sex with something that isn't human, that is a robot. But yeah, I mean, maybe that could make a dent in population statistics, but I would say a very small dent, and an easier way would be to just make contraception more widely available.
Yeah, but you know, his point, though, you know, in another context, is that it isn't a form of, I mean, what he's saying, I think, is part of what we talked about earlier, so he's connected to that point, although he may have missed it, is that there are certain people who, it's not a matter of contraception. Lots of people will want to have to be with another person because you have to. I mean, I'm to think of it in terms of a choice. I mean, I don't know that I would think that sex, having a sex robot and having a living, breathing spouse is anywhere even close to a 50-50 kind of arrangement. I mean, I would, so that's the thing. I think there's something intrinsic about the human soul, about who we are, to want to physically connect. And hopefully sex is always a byproduct of great communication and of bonding, and something that, even if it's temporary, it's something that you're sharing. You're not really sharing something with a rubber doll.
Yes. And there's also the idea that we are moving into a world where sex is going to be completely separated from reproduction. You know, if you can grow a baby in a bag, if you can conceive a baby outside of a human body, we are looking at a future where sex has nothing to do with reproduction. You go to a facility to create a baby, and you have sex just for fun. In which case, then there's, you know, definitely a place for robots to fulfill that part.
Well, let's go ahead and grab a couple of people from New York. Myad's in New York City on Coast to Coast AM for Jenny Kleeman.
Morning. Good morning. Such an excellent show. Jenny, I'd like to ask my question, a brief multi-part, and a couple points of clarification, and at the end, a brief statement as to why this program is so special and exceptional. First of all, spell both your names and give your website. Second, I'd like to know a bit about the genesis of how you got into this path and research. I'd also want a bit more details in terms of the doll's battery operated, you know, before we see the picture, and some of the costs involved with the vegan. And Ian, NPR WNYC had a whole thing, I think it was Innovation Hub, on outfits looking to get us to love insects and this flower, et cetera. Lastly, I think that Joe, I think he got to the heart of it in a sense, in that especially now there's a spiritual malaise that is so far away from these advanced technologies that I'd like to know your thoughts on the ethical. Is there any countries that have any kind of ethical infrastructure around this technology? And my comment is, this is such a special program because it replicates the macabre, the absurd, and the farcical that is in our times now, thankfully without the fascism. And thank you for this program. I'll listen over the air, and I hope you got my questions.
Yeah.
Now 50% fascist free or something. Oh, that's interesting. where are you with that, Jenny?
Well, you know what? I was taking notes because I'm a journalist. So I've got
good
all of her questions down there. So, I am Jenny Kleeman. JennyKleeman.com is my website. That's to answer your question. K-L-E-E-N-A-N. The genesis of this was that I saw, quite often as a journalist, the joy is seeing a very little story somewhere that somebody else has done and completely missed what's interesting about it. So I saw in, I think it was 2016, or it could have been 2015, I saw a very small news article in the British press about this British academic campaign against sex robots. This feminist academic campaign against sex robots. And I looked at it and I thought, this is fascinating. But hold on, let's just hold up here and see, do these things exist? Who is making them? Who wants to buy them? So it began with that, and then I had also been looking at the right to die and technologies with the right to die. So once I had sex and death, I thought, okay, I'll investigate birth and food, and there you have the kind of four pillars of human experience there.
You do.
And in terms of the battery power, that is a really, really good question. I think at the moment, or certainly when I was interviewing the robots, which was a couple of years ago, the robots needed a lot of power, and they had a battery pack, which was a kind of bag that they were wearing, a sort of small little handbag. That, of course, is not ideal. You don't necessarily want to have sex with something that's holding onto their handbag. So I think they're kind of ironing that out, and technology is getting, you know, we all know from each generation of phones how much better battery life gets and how much smaller batteries are. But it's certainly something that needs to be thought about, and you would need to plan ahead and charge up your robot if you wanted to be getting busy with it. And your question about, you know, are there countries that have a kind of ethical infrastructure around technology, this being reflective of a spiritual malaise that we are experiencing globally? I would say that, and this goes back to the campaign against sex robots, I don't think that any nation can legislate against this kind of technology. Because for every country that says, okay, we're not going to allow sex robots, or we're not going to allow child sex dolls or child sex robots, there will be other countries, there will be North Koreas, there will be other countries that really don't care what the international conventions are and will start developing them. So I would say that the key to all of this is for us to be having these discussions now and to be thinking about this critically now, because the power we have is to choose not to buy this stuff, for there to be no market for this stuff. And that comes from having conversations where we're not dazzled by some science fiction dream of what this stuff is, because a lot of this stuff, the meat grown in labs, the babies grown in bags, the death machines, the sex robots, they're all tropes of science fiction, and we think we know them when we talk about them. We have images in our head of what they are, but in fact we need to think about what they really are and not necessarily accept the marketing message being produced by the entrepreneurs developing them. And we need to be able to ask ourselves before they arrive on our doorstep whether or not we really want them.
That's fascinating. And I know she asked me some questions in there. I can't remember anything, so I'll just say I think the time is coming when sex robots will be made out of vegan meat. And if you
fight out of them.
Yeah, if you slut shame a sex robot, they'll take away your children or something. All right. Let's go to Brendan. No, Joe is in Long Island. He's been waiting the longest on Coast to Coast AM just to make sure we get him in. Joe?
Yeah. I want to ask Jenny, you know, the idea if you're not in Westworld, okay, there's such a thing as vibrational attraction. Say a guy sits in a cafe, and it may not be purposeful, but maybe all of a sudden five girls are sitting around him and not running away from him. Or a girl's at the beach, and she sits there and reads a book. Now, she may not intend that people will come near, but all of a sudden eight guys are you know, setting up their place on the beach near her. So there's like kind of a vibrational, situational attraction.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily wholly interactive, that's subtle, that I think is breached by the robots as one aspect of this. And my other thing is on the island of Dr. Moreau, they took away the anecdote. They couldn't get back.
That's true. Well, you know, it's interesting. We used to call it, when I was a younger guy, we used to call that the Musk. We weren't referring to the guy. We were saying that there are some people who have an attraction that's greater than the sum of their parts. And you just can't put a finger on it. It's just, they got the Musk. You know, there's just nothing you can do, and they can't get rid of it.
And you know, I don't know what that is. What is it, charisma, or is it a certain kind of approachability? I have a picture in my head of a very specific girl who's a friend of a friend, who's very unremarkable looking, who everybody who meets her just wants to be close to her.
Yep, she's got the Musk.
I think that's a really good point. I think, so the kind of big overarching point is there is so much more to what makes us human than just a few sentences or some things that can be absorbed by machine learning or chatbots. Or the question is, how close can we ever come to the wonderful complexity of what makes us human? And I think we can come closer and closer in terms of simulation, but it never really will be human, because there is so much magic that's there, particularly when it comes to interactions and attraction. There's so much that we can't understand. But yes, I think that robots are never going to be able to replace that or fully replicate it perfectly. But the danger is that it just might be good enough to make a large number of people satisfied with it and further isolated from other people because of it.
Judging by the phones tonight, if you want to sit in a cafe and attract a crowd, be sitting there sipping a, you know, a cappuccino and reading Sex Robots and Vegan Meat, because the phones have been packed all hour long and they're not done yet. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to everybody. But Patrick's hanging on a first-time caller line. Nope, no, he's not. See, I was just getting that close. So sorry, buddy. And I wish I could have gotten everybody on too. Jenny, I hope you had fun, and I enjoyed every subject that you started, the conversations that will be continuing, and I know I'll continue to hear from people on Twitter as well. So thank you for making time for us.
Every moment of it. I loved all of it. It's such fascinating, interesting, engaged listeners you have, and such excellent music and fantastic conversation with you, Ian. Thank you so much for having me.
Yay, team. Love that. Appreciate that. And that's coming from somebody who's at the top of her game on many platforms. Find out more by linking up to Jenny Kleeman at our website. So back again this Saturday night, and I'll be talking with Peter Lance. We're going to be talking about the new book, which is about Doris Duke, the millionaire's murderer. And he's cracked this story. You won't want to miss it this coming Saturday night. I'll be back on Coast to Coast AM. And in the meantime, Deus Tiamat, and I do too. Happy Valentine's Day, sort of.